radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Cyberspace is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. There you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get on the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary, on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
Don't you know we're talking about a revolution sound? Don't you know talking about a revolution sound, like, while they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know talking about a revolution sound? People gonna rise up, get their share. Poor people gonna rise up, take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run.
My name is Dr. Umar Johnson, and I am a school psychologist and doctor of clinical psychology. In addition to that, I hold degrees in political science and education. I am here at the historic St. Paul's College. This beautiful campus, 135 acres of which I hope to make the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey RBG International Leadership Academy for African Children. This college, St. Paul's, was opened on September the 24th, 1888, by a contemporary of the great Booker T. Washington. That great ancestor's name was James Solomon Russell. Father Russell opened this college with less than a dozen students. And by the time it reached its zenith, St. Paul's College owned more than 1,000 acres of land and housed more than 1,000 African children. But unfortunately, last summer, June of 2013, the board of directors of this college graduated the last class of students from St. Paul's College. I'm hoping that you will help me keep this college in the hands of the African American community. I have a plan for this campus. I want to turn this campus into the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Academy. There's a war in this country against black boys. I don't have to tell you, only one out of every four African American boys will graduate from high school. I don't have to tell you that two out of every four African American boys at some point in his life will be under the supervision of America's criminal justice system. I don't have to tell you that there's a school to prison pipeline that runs out the back door of the school into the front door of the prison. I want to stop that. And I want you to help Dr. Umar Johnson stop that by donating to my fundraiser, by helping me and our ancestors raise the money necessary to acquire St. Paul's campus. We need this 135 acres for our children. We have the dormitories. We have the gymnasium. We have the lecture halls. We have the cafeteria. We have a beautiful student center. I want this school to be a blueprint, a role model to every other independent African school in the world, to show them that African children are not the intellectual inferiors of European Americans, to show them that our children want to learn as much as anyone else. I'm tired of the phone calls from our mothers and fathers crying about what's being done to their children. I'm tired of special education when it's not necessary. I'm tired of ADHD diagnoses and conduct disorder diagnoses and oppositional defiance diagnoses and learning disability diagnoses and emotional disturbance diagnoses. I'm tired, and I want you to be tired with me, of our children being forced to exist in a system that was not designed to educate them in the first place. I want to give them a heaven on earth. I want to give them a home away from home. And I want St. Paul's College to be that place. Imagine a school where children don't have to be suspended. Imagine a school where your child never gets expelled. Imagine a school where your child never gets misdiagnosed and put in special education. Imagine a school where you don't have to worry about the teachers trying to force you to put your son or daughter on dangerous psychiatric medication. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, community stakeholders of the African race, I implore you, I beg you, I summon you and I petition you to donate to this cause, donate to this fundraiser. Let us show the world that we care enough about our children and enough about our history and enough about our ancestors to keep St. Paul's College in the hands of the African American community and in the hands of Dr. Umar Johnson and in the interest of African children and under the skies of Almighty God and our ancestors. Help me keep this college alive and keep the dream of its founder, James Solomon Russell, alive forever.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. I'm your host and facilitator, and we thank you for logging on. We thank you for your continuous support of the Blake Radio Network, both the Rainbow Soul and Music Massage. We started off the program with a message in the music Tracy Chapman talking about a revolution. And we also heard a piece from Dr. Umar Johnson, who's a psychologist, and he shared his vision to create the Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, RBG Boys Academy. And he'll be our guest, along with Jasper Jones, who is also rumbling for education on another front. Both of them are from Philadelphia, and we had an opportunity to speak with them separately. And we'll listen to Jasper Jones following these messages. So don't go anywhere. He'll give you some idea of what's going on in terms of the revolution to educate our people, because it seems the powers that be, the ruling elites, have determined that they're going to implode public education as we knew it and replace it with privatization, a watered down and diluted form of public education that is racially and ethnically segregated. We'll get back to a de facto apartheid, and of course it will be inferior. So we need to be aware, and also be aware of the ways that people are fighting back. And we encourage you to stay tuned for that following these messages.
If you are enjoying the programming here on the Blake Radio Network, please log into our website at www.blakeradio.com, then click on Rainbow Soul and sign up to help keep this venue alive for only 19 cents a day. In order for us to keep bringing you this radio station, we need your support. So log into BlakeRadio.com, then click on Rainbow Soul, and sign up for only 19 cents a day to help keep this radio station on the air. Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com, or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link, type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address, and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109 Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support.
Gracious Professor Griff, you're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Our guest is Jasper Jones, who is an activist. He's an attorney. He's a very brilliant man. I've known him for close to 20 years. He's always doing something to break down the barriers and the systemic and institutionalized racism and bigotry in this country. And currently he's grappling with the state to dismantle the school to prison pipeline and to make the public school system serve the children and the people as opposed to the industrial prison complex. Welcome, brother. How you doing?
All right, you, my brother. Glad to be here talking to you about this critical issue. By coincidence, I was telling you I met the young man who just graduated from the University of Pennsylvania Law School, who had the unfortunate incident of being introduced to the Asian pro system by being cut out of a million-five deal that he had actually put together in conjunction with a firm that he was working in as a junior partner. So the new Jim Crow system is actually the old Jim Crow system with a new name. It's in a new bag. It's still with us. In the school system, we really have an issue in that the school district of Philadelphia, only 9% of the children, young people that are attended, are being educated to the point where they actually are receiving an education that gives them the skills they need to function in our computer age society. Stated the other way around, they have a 91% failure rate to educate our children of color in the school district of Philadelphia.
Now that's a complex issue. Basically, there's so many components to it. I think part of it has to do with many elements in our community have given up on education, that the importance of education is not as keen and critical as it was, say, a generation, maybe two generations ago. But then you have the institutional part that you're dealing with. So what's your take on some of the other aspects of this problem? We're not going to talk necessarily at this point about the family and children being ready and having an attitude of success.
Well, see, I'm actually a professional educator. And what you're saying doesn't click with me because I actually went through the process, got certified to teach all subjects K-12. I've done that. In the National Teachers Exam, I scored in the 95th percentile. I was a research assistant in the late 60s and early 70s in the development of program instruction technology. And in school districts where that technology is applied, they have a 99% success rate in developing students who become proficient in the computer skills and other skills that you need to be employable in living wage jobs to go on to college or technical skills. Schools. So that doesn't really hold up with me because I have taught in programs where I had students, all of whom were what they call high risk or adjudicated youth. And the program I had, when we evaluated them at the beginning of the year, they were all at third, fourth, and fifth grade reading levels. At the end of the year, the lowest level was 10. So these were young people that had rebelled against the systems, and that was the early 70s that I ran that program.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually know what you're doing, you can educate any young person or any adult. Then what we have is the $3.1 billion in the school district of Philadelphia that gets spent every year, and only those who are privileged receive an education, because you basically have two school systems. The private school within the public school system, where if you are connected or blessed to have skills where they say, oh, we need to educate this one, you get in that track, you get an education. But the 91% of the students don't get into that track, so they don't get an education. But the technology exists so that we can educate every person in our society successfully if it's just used. The reason I'm really bringing that up is my organization in 94 to 96 went through the evaluation process required by the federal government. If you're going to spend a lot of money, that's federal money, in the education process, that's required to be done to determine if your program will actually achieve the program objectives. We went through that process. It took close to 2 years. We got the letter of approval of what we did not know. Was no one else had ever gotten a letter of approval to bring a program in that was going to use a lot of federal money. Then a funny thing happened. The program office of categorical support of the School District of Philadelphia, which issued the letter, was abolished by the then mayor, Rendell. And then the second thing happened that even astounded me after going all over the country. A task force was formed to stop the implementation of our program. I found out about that because one of the people in a room where this task force was being formed mostly a room of 20-something people. Two were non-white. One of those non-white people was my schoolmate, so I got a call telling me that this task force was being formed to stop the implementation of the program. So what we're dealing with here is premeditated institutional violence directed at people of color. And we're talking about the situation in the School District of Philadelphia. And as I sent you, the analysis done by a doctor of social science, we showed that it's statistically impossible from the number of criminal incidents that are being transacted against young men who are black and brown to be incurring unless this is a programmatic, structural thing that's an intervention to make it happen. That intervention is institutional racism.
Yeah, I concur with that, and I remember when you came on the show, my show, when I was doing terrestrial radio to talk about your program. What the thing too is that they have criminalized poverty. So in our situation, where we're at the bottom of the socioeconomic level or the pyramid, it makes it easier to do what you and your group are alleging that they're doing in the school system.
Well, more than alleging it, I actually have documentation that shows that prior to it being known that the majority of students were going to be non-white in a particular school building, that the schools were designed as either a big home or a big factory. And the schools, once they were known to be non-white, the architectural design was school as prison.
Yeah, yeah. So you can see that pretty much, I think, most of the schools that were constructed during a certain era, particularly in Philadelphia, that is definitely true. You can see that with your own eye.
Yeah, and we actually have, by professional city planners and architects, a book that shows us that and says it straight up in the documentation. So we have an institutional violence problem that is an unlawful violation of the constitutional rights of the people of color in the great city of Philadelphia that's been perpetrated to steal the great wealth of the city.
Now, have you been able to document this occurring in other cities specifically?
I've witnessed the same thing in every city I've visited.
Mm-hmm.
I came back home because just as that my classmate was in the room with the enemy, I know a lot of people here, and I figured that would be an asset to attempt to deal with this monstrous situation that we face in here in Philadelphia. I was correct about that. I can tell you one more story that I can say because the person that did it is no longer with us, and that's Rutan Lee, who was president of the school board for a period of time. I went to Rutan because I had known him because his father was a doctor, and at one time he was our family's doctor. So I had known Rutan for a very long time. So I went to him and I said, man, can you help me out with this? And what I actually had was a system of inventory and managerial control for managing an operation like a school district, which would have CADed all the buildings, that's computer system design,
right.
Put them into a database so that you would actually be able to bring up a map and blueprint of all the school facilities, and then you would be able to do a relational database link to the room and be able to determine what was going on in the room, and eventually working with my partner, who's one of 30 people in the country that has, about 30 people have a PhD in cost accounting, we would have been able to come up with the cost for every increment of advancement of education for every student in the school district. What Rutan came back to me and said after he attempted to get that in place was, brother, Jazz, I can't get this done. You're going to stop these guys from stealing. That's what we're dealing with. He's no longer with us, so I can talk about this incident that actually occurred. And so that's my direct confirmation of the problem here in Philadelphia.
Now, you recently filed a suit And when I saw you about a week or so ago, you were telling me what happened with the suit. So the suit was thrown out.
It's not thrown out. Let me clarify what actually happened. We went into Commonwealth Court with, and what we were doing is it's called a per se violation of the law. The federal government has rigid protocols for dealing with special needs category students who are protected class of students. And when they close the schools, they unlawfully close them according to federal regulations with regard to the per se services that are required to be given to special needs students. So we said, oh, well, you just go into Commonwealth Court with this instead of just asking the normal stuff, which is that the individual students get relief. We ask that as a class, they be certified and that the remedy be a forensic audit of the School District of Philadelphia, and that at every point in which money was not being appropriately spent, that we begin to spend it appropriately so that they would be delivered the services for the money. All students, including the special needs students, would be delivered the appropriate services using state-of-the-art educational delivery technology. What happened is the machine said no, because what the Commonwealth Court did is they couldn't throw it out because our lawyer, Sister Plummer, who's a Harvard graduate, she put together an excellent case, and she said, this is really disturbing. Based on my trying the same type of case before and the preponderance of evidence that we presented, they should have gave us the ruling that we requested for relief, which would have been a forensic audit of the School District of Philadelphia. It turns out that no one has ever requested as relief a forensic audit of the school district. I put that in as the strategy because that really is the only thing that will resolve the problem, because it is a fact that we have $3.1 billion in money coming in every year, but yet we have students, mostly of color, that do not have textbooks, do not have computers in the computer age society, that are in buildings that have been subjected to deferred maintenance, which means they haven't been maintained, and they have rarely seen a competent teacher, and are being fed food that's really only fit for food fights, which occasionally occurs due to the frustration of the students from not having a competent teacher, not having textbooks, or access to computer-assisted instruction. And so we really have a institutional violence problem in Philadelphia. Because let me say this again, the technology exists so that you would have a success with close to 100% of your students if you use that technology to deliver educational services and support services related that are needed to be delivered to students so that they have the capacity to deal with the stress of the teaching and learning process.
So as a result of being thwarted at that particular point, what's your strategy now? What are you going to do now?
Let me say that what that thwarting amounts to is a Dred Scott type decision, because basically they referred the case back to Common Pleas Court. They could not throw it out, so they hung their hat and were saying, you're not in the right venue. And refers back to Common Pleas Court, which actually is a violation of enumerated rights in the Constitution of Commonwealth Pennsylvania. Because when you have a case against a governmental body, you're supposed to go to Commonwealth Court. That's the way the law reads.
Now, will you be able to judge shop? Because a lot of times...
we hope to be able to judge shop into the federal court.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're looking to do also is to get the indigenous people to go into international court, because many of them are being subjected to this process, and they have the right to go into international court for human rights violations, because that's what this amounts to. It's a human rights violation of all the students who have been subjected to this process, again, where they're not being given textbooks, they rarely see a competent teacher, they're not being housed in buildings that are properly maintained, they're not being given appropriate food, which is under the law they're supposed to be given. And so you have all of these things going on that amount to fraudulent conversion, because the money is being spent but the goods are not, the services are not being properly delivered.
So how long do you anticipate this will take to wind its way to get back to Commonwealth Court?
We're not going back to Commonwealth Court. We're going
you're not going to Common Pleas, you're going to Federal Court.
Yeah, we have to go to Federal Court because we know that the Common Pleas Court is, like you said, need a judge shop because it's corrupt. We're not going to do that. We're going to go into Federal Court, and the issue of going into Federal Court is because the school district is 192,000 students approximately. You need thousands of people to sign your petition saying you've had enough, affirming that these violations exist, and you need people, at least a couple of thousand, to give affidavits of abuse supporting the systemic existence of this institutional violence that I'm describing, which again is they don't get competent teachers, they don't get textbooks, they don't get computers, they're housed in buildings that have been subjected to deferred maintenance, which means they haven't been maintained properly. So these are the issues that we want addressed. The curriculum exists and the computer technology exists to educate every student and to manage their outplacement into either a higher education situation or a living wage job. Instead of that occurring, this system is functioning by these institutional violence abuses as a school to prison pipeline, de facto.
Yeah, the material you sent me and the piece entitled Criminalizing Kids, I mean, the things that we talked about earlier in terms of the construction and design of the schools are like prisons. The Dr. Thompson points out how the young people felt like they were being treated as criminals, being wined and had to go through metal detectors, and some of the policies that they were subjected to in their day-to-day dealings as they went to school basically creates an attitude or a feeling that is almost like old day apartheid. You know,
it is old. It is old day apartheid in new clothes.
Right,
in
right, school, right.
That is, instead of being a free range prisoner slave, you're now going to be incarcerated and work for pennies per hour in the prison industrial complex, and you're being trained and socialized to fit into that process in the prison industrial complex by the way they structure the schools.
Right. And by having the deferred maintenance or the dilapidated schools, it basically gets back to almost, and as you know, in Philadelphia where you had two-tier system, as you pointed out earlier, where if you have the influence or you live in a certain neighborhood or you're now, what we're seeing is these regentrified neighborhoods, the schools are getting better and they have the magnet schools and that most of our young people can't get into. And so, in effect, instead of having these shotgun shacks that they had, you know, 70, 80 years ago, now you have these you know, brick and concrete monoliths that basically look like prisons.
That is correct. So that they graduate from the minimum security prison to the medium security prison, and some graduate to super max if they get into extreme violence and they're made crazy by the socialization process that goes on in the minimum security prison.
How long do you think this process will take to get the requisite petitions and then make the filings and then wind its way to get on the docket and then wind its way to a hearing?
It actually depends on how many people we're able to mobilize and whether or not we can get boots on the ground like we did when we ended the apartheid at Girard College.
All right, so how can people find out more about this program?
They can email me at cadrelawyers@yahoo.com, and I'll be happy to send them a case and the forms to participate.
All right, now, a lot of times they want you to have standing. So people who hear this who don't live in Philadelphia, Can they sign the petition?
If they attended a Philadelphia school, they can sign the petition for relief. But we need people who are still, who have gone through the school district to file the affidavits of abuse affirming that this is going on.
Mm-hmm.
We have two sets of documents that need to be filled out by people to participate. That is the petition demanding relief that the system be restructured from a school, de facto school to prison system, back to a school to work system. And people who have suffered the abuse to fill out affidavits describing the abuse that they were subjected to.
Now, this would entail people who recently graduated. You're talking about... I'm just saying the list would continue, would be parents, guardians, foster care parents.
Yes.
Young people who recently graduate who can articulate what happened to them or how their dreams were derailed or their education was stifled. So what other criterion or what other types of people can sign the petition?
People who gone through the system and have issues that didn't receive a thorough and efficient education, and I'm finding many that meet that definition. I've run into so many people who went through the public school system that did not know there was a Pennsylvania Constitution. And by definition, that means they did not receive a thorough and efficient education.
All right. Now, is there the website you gave your email, is there a website that people can go up and look at what you're doing and get more information?
Yes. PhilyNMC.webs.com.
Okay, give that again.
PhilyNMC.webs.com. That's PhilyNMC, N as in new, M as in majority, C as in council, dot, W as in one, E as in easy, B as in boy, S as in Susie.com.
All right. Now, where are you with this particular process right now?
We're restarting the process of collecting affidavits and getting petition signatures and raising money to pay the lawyer and to pay the legal fees and to pay the expert witnesses like Dr. Thompson and actually myself. And I'm the longest running expert professional on this issue in the area because I started actually taking abuse on from the system in 1971.
Okay. Are you still involved? Because I remember when I first met you, you were involved in introducing or bridging the so-called digital divide. You were working.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to start that probably back up in Chester. What I started working on after this, I encountered so many criminals that were sabotaging that program, even though as it helped your nephew. We were helping a lot of people. They sent saboteurs in on that program. And so I said, well, okay, let me do something else. What I mean by that is one of the guys that was sent to me that I started working with and moved him into a key position, when the federal government sent a work order to bring 36,000 computers into the empowerment zone, he activated himself and attempted to steal the work order. I was told through my network, again, the enemy doesn't know that often in the room there are people who are not with them. I was told that he was told by a certain official that they would assist him in being able to steal the contract. Of course, he couldn't do it, but that created problems. But after he did that, that let me know the level of madness that I was dealing with in my own community. So I changed my focus and moved to the other issue that we face if we're going to survive as a people, given the situation that we're now in. And that is putting in place a configuration to move us off of fossil fuels into hydrogen. So we have the River City to Hydrogen Dream Team, which I configured off-the-shelf technology in such a way that you can come into any river city like Philadelphia and without building a dam, convert the city to hydrogen. The water from the river flowing provides the mechanical energy to power the system that moves the water from the river to the shore and moves it through a system where it turns into hydrogen. That's one stream. The other stream of input stream is biosewage gas. So we have the ability to take biosewage gas and turn it into synthetic hydrogen and organic fertilizer. In Philadelphia, as in all the urban areas, we have people that have problems paying for food and energy. And because the energy costs are so high, it's stifling the ability of the manufacturing sector, which is the wealth generation sector in Philadelphia, to be able to expand. So we need to get the city to move off of expensive fossil fuels, which are becoming more scarce every day, which is why the price keeps going up, and only to abundant, clean, green hydrogen, which the actual funding to convert to hydrogen would come from the microclimate exchange marketplace through what's called a non-recourse financial instruments, because it's a clean development mechanism project, which means that the people of Philadelphia who own the gas works and the water department, which is the departments that we will be working with, will not have to pay for the capital cost to do the conversion from fossil fuels to hydrogen.
Yeah, yet, I remember, but at one point, say, because like I said, I've known you for almost 20 years, so one point you were dealing specifically with, I think it was the PGW, trying to get...
We're still dealing with them.
Okay.
And the problem is that, you know, the executives and part of the city council have received the payments in their campaign from the fossil fuel sector, and so they are stonewalling, signing the paperwork, which would allow me to go to the agency, which would certify that the money is available with non-recourse financial instruments for a clean development mechanism project that converts the city to hydrogen.
But it's not, I mean, it's not just those people. The people who have the vested interest in the hydrocarbon, the oil companies, these people now who are trying to move into fracking and shale and all that. I mean, it's almost like you'll be facing the same people that you do on all these other issues that you confront. I mean, because you've been out there rumbling
the same
for
people,
years.
My brother.
It's the same people.
I can assure you that.
Yeah.
We've done the research. It's the same people.
Yeah.
And the nickname for them is the Crown. Sometimes we call them robber barons. The agents in America are called robber barons. But it's the same Crown people that brought colonial slavery to the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. And
the same people. And what people need to understand is that what we have is two groups of people here in our country, patriots and agents of the Crown, who are modern-day Tories.
Well, I mean, even the Crown was subject to a certain element that were not, quote-unquote, royalty, so they just went in cahoots with them so they could, you know.
Yeah, vassal serfs and slaves to the Crown.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what we're dealing with in this situation.
All right, we have a couple more minutes left. So what can our listeners around the world who are hearing this and the light bulb is going off in their head say, okay, there are viable solutions to the oppression that we face. What can they do to be supportive and to get more information?
They can go to phillynmc.webs.com. and sign up to the group, and that allows them, once they sign up to that group, to get access to the open source documents that they can download that step-by-step show you how to file a lawsuit in your community and teach you about the laws that we are blessed to have in the United States that allow you to get your freedom. And by that I mean to get control over the resources that are being sent to your community every day, to give you a proper education, access to capital credit, and nutritional support. There's a way that you can do that, and I've cataloged it and put it up on that website. And if you decide to join that group in phillynmc.webs.com, you have access to it, and you can contact me to assist you. And that website contains documentation from MIT that shows what was going to happen when we reached peak oil.
Mm-hmm.
And we reached it in 2007. They said 2030. The year was wrong that they had when they did the calculation in 72, because they were being optimistic. But everything they said was going to happen, happened then. And people who also who are completely awake, you can go to God, GOD-economics, ECOMICS dot WEDS.com, and you can see a discussion about my discovery in 2002 that the recession depression cycles of the Western feudal world overlay the Jubilee process in the Bible, which means that we replicate an equivalent process to the Jubilee process in the Bible. We will no longer have recessions and depressions. And the River City, the Hydrogen Green Team, and the Crop Action Team, Community Refugees Action Plan, Action Team proposals actually do that.
All right. Now, one of the things you're attempting to educate people to resources that are available and ways to empower themselves, ourselves. The issue is that we're dealing with people who have no, they're psychopaths. They have no conscience whatsoever. And so, and I'm certainly an optimist. I believe that in the long run, we will, through trial and error, figure out how to overcome it. But folks need to understand this is going to be a long and fierce battle.
It has been a long and fierce battle. God has taken us to this point. One of the things that happened is in 2010, in July, when God came through the United States and had created a disturbance in which trees were lifted up off the ground and moved around. No human being was hurt and no building damaged. To the indigenous people such as myself, as I am a Cherokee Indian, that was notification of the reaching of the fourth crow. And the fourth crow period is the time that was prophesied in which the people who were indigenous to the country would have to come out of their hiding and explain to people how this country came to be. When the Europeans arrived here, because the prophets of our people, indigenous people, had been told they were coming, and instead of killing them, they were told by the prophets to make a place for them. The place that was made was Philadelphia, and thus Philadelphia became the first free city-state to break away from the crown. That fact is not known to most people, and also what's not known to most people is that the people who came here as vassal serfs and slaves to the crown that were white and non-white, and the defection rate, because the original slaves were mostly white, was so high that they started fleeing in such numbers once they found out that they wouldn't be killed if they defected to the indigenous society and become free people, where they would have such privileges being able to go out into the forest and kill a deer without having the sheriff to come and put them on a rack and torture them. Because those defection rates were so high, the crown came up with the idea of putting the white vassal serfs and slaves over the non-white vassal serfs and slaves, creating white privilege, which morphed into white supremacy. People have been stultified so much that they don't know that that's really occurred, and that our Constitution is actually a translation into English of the protocols of the Iroquois Confederation by the founding fathers, because they said, hey, this system is much better than being a vassal serf or slave to the crown that exists here of the indigenous people of America.
Well, the indigenous people, they told them, and I guess it was 1750-something, about that, because really, despite what we were told in school about the Magna Carta and all that kind of stuff, representative government really didn't exist in Europe. It was the Native Americans that told Ben Franklin and a couple of other people, a couple of other Europeans about it. But we'd have to spend more time than we have, because we only have about 2 minutes left. So give your contact information, and then share anything final, last minute, that you want to impart, so people can have some optimistic view of what's going to happen in the future.
Contact 206-203-2661, phone message. Email cadreoflawyers@yahoo.com, cadreoflawyers@yahoo.com. Website, Philly, N as in new, M as majority, csncouncil.weds.com. Hope and pray that God is the greatest, because when God in 2010 announced the prophecy of the fourth crow coming to being, which we've gone through all of the other phases, first crow before the Europeans came, where there was no prisoners, pollution, poverty, and very little psychosis, and little premature death in our society. It came, killed most of the indigenous people here after their search, and slaves had defected in such large numbers that in the West you now see Indians that look like they're white. This is a 500-year process, and the intermarriage was that great, that there is hope in God's prophecy of the fourth crow, in which we would essentially return to the first crow period with the new Indians, as the people are finding out they are the new Indians, because the crown is applying to the entire American citizenry everything they did to the indigenous people at this point through their allies, who call themselves now some other name, but they are just modern day Tories. But God, the real master of the universe, favors the righteous over the wicked and evil, as he's proven in the past. And through God's will and people waking up to the authority of God over them, which is unconditional love, we can prevail in this battle and move into a new era of hydrogen power, where we will have unlimited energy, abundance of food, and we'll end this ridiculous weather pattern, because we've traveled now into a sector of the galaxy where we actually should be having a tropical climate.
Well, like I said, we don't have a lot of time to go into it, but we both know that a lot of this is due to their manipulation of electromagnetic manipulation. But
yes,
I'll have to have you back so we go through this, because and let people know, because a lot of just by listening to you, a lot of people will be shocked by what you're saying, and a lot of this is common knowledge. I mean,
it's common knowledge if you just go and investigate it. That's what's really great about America. This information is all out there. All you have to do is look for it and knock, and the door will be open.
All right, brother. What I will do is I will contact you. We'll get back to, and next time you'll be my guest for the whole show, the whole 2 hours. So, but we just have to set it up and make it happen.
Okay.
All right, brother.
All right, my brother.
All right, man. Stay strong, black man. You're listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Stay tuned.
I move, I'm stirred when someone says, you can't do it. And I think that it would seem that that comes out of my background as a black, as a woman, as an American, having been told on so many levels that I couldn't do it. It would seem that that's where that originates, that response. But I don't know. It may be deeper than that. That's pretty deep.
Mm-hmm.
But it may be, I find that statement, you can't, offensive to the human spirit. I think that we can be anything. We have no idea where we're going as a species. The greatest genius says that we have never used more than 18% of our mental machine. So to say to a young black girl or a young white boy or a young Asian child or Hispanic or Native American, you can't, is to deny maybe why we're here. Maybe this entire experience is a series of lessons to learn that you can. Yes, you can. Sometimes people forget that the most important of all the virtues is courage, because without courage, you can't practice any other virtue with consistency. You can't be consistently kind or true or generous or open or fair-minded without courage pushing you, keeping you on track.
Coming out of the break, we heard a snippet from the late, great Maya Angelou, her message about courage. And the reality that it takes courage to consistently practice the other virtues, such as kindness, truthfulness, integrity, brotherly love, and courtesy. Because without courage, you can't be consistent. You will waffle and waver during the circumstance. And so we shared that to pay homage to her as she makes her journey into the ancestral realm. As most of you know, she made a transition several days ago. We're going to listen to Dr. Umar Johnson as he explains his vision to create the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey RBG Boys Academy. And you can see a video of this audio at wacptv.ning.com, also at the Harambe Radio .ning.com, the Blacklist pub at ning.com, and also YouTube and Vimeo. Just look up Junius Ricardo Stanton on either YouTube and Vimeo, and you'll see a list of my videos up there, and this is one of them. So stay tuned. We're going over. Normally our programs are about 60 minutes. This will probably be maybe an hour and a half, but it's well worth it as we look at the possibilities to extricate ourselves from the situation that the ruling class, the one percenters, want to put us in. We turn to a situation similar to the Dark Ages and feudalism in Europe, and the new monarchs will be the international bankers, the new values shaping institutions won't be the Catholic Church. It'll be the mass media, what I call the mind control apparatus. And the knights will be the military, NATO, the police, and mercenaries. And, of course, there'll be the serfs and peons and slaves. And that's what we're moving toward unless we wake up and fashion a revolution, not necessarily an armed revolution, but one of the mind, one of consciousness, and one of our own personal and collective energies moving toward the betterment and the summum bonum, the greatest good. Having said that, stay tuned for Dr. Umar A. Johnson.
Hotep, my name is Renoko Rashidi. I'm an avid fan of and a big supporter of Brother Junius Stanton.
Who has taken on the awesome challenge to create the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy using the grounds from St. Paul's College, which recently closed its doors. Welcome, brother. How are you?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. You are renowned, particularly from your YouTube videos and your lectures and the information that you give in terms of what's happening to our people, the methicide, genocide aimed at our people. So how are you making the connection and the link from what you're doing as a psychologist and educator to what you're attempting to do with the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy?
I think it's all related. I think it's all one and the same. There's a war against black boys that's sending more of them to the cemetery and to the prison, to college, or into business. And that school-to-prison pipeline has a big piece in the middle called special education and ADHD. And a lot of times people don't necessarily appreciate the role that special education and ADHD has in the psychoacademic war against black boys. Being a school psychologist, getting my start right here with the School District of Philadelphia, I saw firsthand how special ed was used as a weapon of mass destruction against black boys. I saw how the learning disabilities and the ADHD and the mental retardation was being used to suffocate our boys and deprive them of an adequate education. And so I came to the realization several years ago while I was working as an assistant principal to open up my own school, because in doing that, I can give them the psychological support and I can give them the educational support that they need. So for me, building the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Academy was a logical next step from my work as a school psychologist, which was to try to save children who are already academically marginalized, to being in a position to actually raise them and socialize them and educate them appropriately so they never end up as cannon fodder in the war against black boys.
So what was the significance of choosing St. Paul? There are a lot of places you could have gone, a lot of facilities that probably may have opened their doors to you, but what's the imperative for you to use St. Paul?
St. Paul, a lot of it had to do with availability, location, feasibility, and cost. For example, Morris Brown College was just sold to the city of Atlanta for about $14 million. That's a pretty price versus what St. Paul's is looking for, which is in the low millions. Also, there's other historically black colleges that may soon, unfortunately, come up for sale as well, but they're not at the selling stage. And because I want my school to be residential, I was looking for a place that had the dormitories as well as the athletic facilities, as well as the academic facilities. And St. Paul's, being in Virginia, on the eastern seaboard, not too far from Maryland, Pennsylvania, Delaware, not too far from North Carolina, South Carolina, it was just the perfect location. The size is doable, manageable, small but large enough to make happen what we need to see happen for our young men. So it would be the perfect place for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you contacted them?
I've met with the president. Yes, all of that. I've met with the president. I've met with the realty company that represents the school. And the president and I, more than anything else, have been in contact on a regular basis, you know, and they're hoping that I can make the money that's necessary, that I can raise the funds. But if not, I understand that they do have some bills that got to be paid before they close out the facility. So if they have to sell it, then they have to sell it. You know, but they are compassionate to what I'm trying to do, and they're trying to exercise as much patience as possible. But at the end of the day, business is still business,
right?
Which is why I'm hoping that members of our community, the African and African-American community, will help me by supporting to the fundraiser, that they go to drumarjohnsonschool.com. DrumarJohnsonSchool.com. Click on the PayPal link and donate as much as you can. And don't donate once. Come back two and three times. And I also ask that you donate what you're able to give. Don't give me $20 if you're giving the gas station $100. Don't give me $10 if you're giving your hairdresser, your cosmetologist, $300 a week, but you're only going to give me $20 for our boys. So I'm asking people to give what they're able to give. If you can only give $10, I accept that humbly as the best you can do, and I will value that donation as much as I would a much larger donation. But if you're going to give me something that is beneath what you're able to do, then that's kind of disrespectful, and that's an insult for what we're trying to do. There's a war against black boys, and I'm at the forefront of trying to reverse it. We have a lot of scholars who talk. They talk about it, but they're not doing anything. Dr. Umar Johnson is trying to do something about that war by giving our children a heaven on earth and a home away from the home, the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey RBG Academy, where there will be no special ed, there will be no suspension, there will be no expulsion, there will be no need for psychiatric medication or ADHD. We will also have a small program for deaf children, a small program for blind children, a small program for autistic children, and a small program also for children with serious mental illness. That's what we're looking to do. The school is going to be a school that prepares our children for global economic leadership and domination. We're going to be teaching agricultural and agronomical science. We're going to be teaching economic and financial science. We're going to be teaching spiritual and nutritional science. Science of the Black Family, Science of the Black Community. We will also be teaching spiritual and astrological science, okay? And there will be political and military, economic and financial, agricultural, diet, family, and spirituality. Those will be the six core sciences. We will also have an aviation program, a maritime academy. There will be midwifery programs for the young ladies to be taught how to deliver babies the natural way. There will be an entrepreneurship academy, real estate academy. It's going to be nothing like we've ever seen from any school in this country.
I was talking to on my show about what you're doing is reminiscent of what Booker T. Washington, Mary Cloud, the system.
Yes, it is.
All the people, the people that the father that you talked about that founded St.
Yes.
Paul. And it's almost like we're going back to that era.
Yes.
Where we saw a need and actually did it for the most part without a lot of support from the European community, even though eventually they did come on board. Initially, a lot of those schools were started with the nickels and dimes of working class,
yes,
farmers, people who didn't have a lot because we weren't on those levels in the communities. Now, we're talking about people who really don't have a mindset for altruism,
true,
do for self,
true,
and philosophy. So as part of your work to get us to understand that and get back to that?
Yes, it is. We have to get back to cooperative economics. We have to get back to cooperative education. But I also think that the education systems that we build going forward will be education systems that allow our children to keep pace with the current direction of education in the world and in the country. So for example, right now, too many black parents are forced to choose between sending their child to a defunct, underfunded, and disconnected public school, or send them to a charter school system, or send them to an African-centered school system where you might get culture, but you might not get effective academics. So I don't think it's fair that black parents have to choose between learning and culture. So we have parents who are putting their children in white schools because they want the quality of education, but the children are also going to get an indoctrination and self-hatred. On the other side, you can put them in an Afrocentric charter school where they learn about culture, but where the education may not necessarily be what it needs to be. We need a system where they get the culture at a 100% optimal level and the academics at a 100% optimal level. Our parents should not have to sacrifice culture for learning and learning for culture, because education is a part of African culture. So you shouldn't have to choose between them. You should be able to bring them together. And if we're able to pull off this Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey Academy, which I know we will do, okay, if we're able to pull it off, it will be the first residential school in American history for African children that is operated upon a Pan-Africanist foundation. And it'll be the first school ever named for both the Honorable Frederick Douglass and the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey. So it will definitely be the first of its kind.
I know your primary objective is raising funds, acquiring the property, but have you given, obviously you have, but have you articulated the type of staff that you want to?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, first of all, with private school certification, you're not required to have a public school certificate. It's a different system, which helps you.
Obviously, you'll be operating in Virginia law.
Yes, it will be under Virginia Department of Education, right, if that's where we end up, which is where I hope we're going to end up. So I got to look at that code, which I've been looking at to see. But private schools are pretty much the same around the country. I've studied them, basically. And it's a separate system. Basically, you're given a lot more freedom to do what you need to do because you're not bringing in public money. Okay, when you bring in public money, now you obligate yourself to laws and requirements that private schools don't have to worry about. You don't have to take none of the state tests or any of that. A private school is like a private institution. Now, as far as the staff, they will need to be, they need to be qualified, but they don't necessarily have to be credentialed based on European framework. You see, I'm looking for the best teachers. And being a school psychologist, having been a school administrator, I know that some of the best teachers are not the certified teachers, okay? I know people who can teach better than anybody with a doctorate degree and a public school teaching cert. But they will have to pass the interview. They will have to demonstrate that they can do the job that we need them to do. And right now we're expecting and we're receiving resumes and cover letters from everyone who's interested in working at the school. So we're classifying them based on their expertise and also based on their interests. Because your interest might be one thing, but your expertise might be something else. And at my school, we may need you for your expertise more than your interest, because we want to make sure that you're proficient in what you're going to be delivering. But because we're going to be offering a lot of non-traditional subjects, like natural food preparation, natural hair care preparation, a lot of these programs are not certified by the state, which means you don't have to have a license in order to be a instructor within the raw foods program. Mm-hmm. You see, so there's going to be a lot of room for me to bring in people who are qualified but not necessarily credentialed through the mainstream educational system to be able to help our children. So that's to say that if someone feels that they have something that they can bring to the table for the school, they should send me their resume. Because a lot of people have been holding back saying, well, I don't have my certification. You might not need your certification. I'm not looking for certification. I'm looking for certified people. Now, excuse me, qualified people, not necessarily certified people. Now, obviously, in some academic core areas, you've got to be private school certified. So for math, science, history, the majors, you have to be private school certified. But in most states, in order to be a private school teacher, certified private school, you do not have to have a public school cert. You do have to have a bachelor's and normally 18 credits in the subject that you're going to be teaching at the school. Mm-hmm. But see, in addition to the academic staff, we're going to need security. We're going to need groundsmen. We're going to need house mothers and house fathers to work with the children. So we have a whole nother section of employment outside of the academic sphere where if someone feels they can really impact and help us raise the next generation of African boys appropriately, then they should send me their resume in their cover letter. In the cover letter, I basically just want to know how they feel they can benefit our children. You know, I have a lot of degrees. I'm not impressed with degrees. Degrees just means you went to a European system and you got a piece of paper for being able to regurgitate what they told you. So I'm not impressed by that. Okay, I'm not impressed by that at all. I'm looking at people with degrees and people without degrees to find the most committed and the most qualified person for the job. And a credential and a degree for me does not necessarily equal qualifications.
Where do they send their resumes?
The resumes should be sent to fdmgresumes@gmail.com. That's FD for Fred Douglas, MG for Marcus Garvey, resumes, R-E-S-U-M-E-S @gmail.com. fdmgresumes@gmail.com. They can also go to drumarjohnsonschool.com. Also, drumarjohnson.com. And also, for people to stay abreast of what I'm doing and how I'm moving, you can also text Dr. Umar to 36,000 on your cell phone, and they'll be enrolled in my automatic text message club. Doesn't cost you any money, so you text DRUMAR to 36000 on your cell phone, and you'll automatically be a part of my text club. And you'll get regular updates from me on what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. You can also follow me on Twitter, Instagram, as well as WhatsApp under Dr. Umar Johnson. And on Facebook, you can follow me at Dr. Umar Ifatunde, which is my Yoruba last name. I use that for Facebook, Dr. Umar Ifatunde, I-F-A-T-U-N-D-E. But brothers and sisters, I'm really hoping that you go to the website right now, DrUmarJohnsonSchool.com. Make your donation. Tell your family. Tell your church. Tell your mosque. Tell your fraternity, your sorority, your Masonic lodge, your community-based organization. Everybody you know, all your friends, all your family, that Dr. Umar Johnson is trying to acquire the St. Paul's Historically Black College for the purpose of transforming it into the Frederick Douglass and Marcus Garvey RBG International Leadership Academy for African Boys.
As a psychologist and an educator and an administrator, you see how the Eurocentric education and pedagogical paradigm has been established. We know that the African approach to education is fundamentally different.
Yeah.
So how, given all the things that you want to expose the children to, how do you plan to have this holistic and integrated approach? And how will you need to train your staff, because you're looking for passionate, competent people, but they may not necessarily have that whole, have made all the dovetail and connections to do it like you envision it.
Well, that's okay, because if the person is passionate and committed, that's far more important to me than somebody being credentialed and uncommitted. If you're passionate and committed and you're willing to learn, they can be taught. It's not hard to teach people how to teach children. Education has been made more complicated because the people in charge of it don't really care about the children. Education is not difficult. It is not difficult at all. The reason why it appears to be difficult is because our children's education are in the hands of predominantly white folk who are not interested in whether they learn or not. 93% of all of America's teachers are middle-class white females. That's the problem. It's not learning. And when we talk about an African-centered education, even within African-centered education, there's still the requirement that you be able to sit and learn. There's still the requirement that you achieve at a high level. But what really Africanizes the education is that not only do you bring in the spirituality, you also bring into the culture, you also bring in the high aesthetic sciences like the music, like the art. We have to make sure that we educate the whole child and not a part of the child, because there's been research on the brain that shows that when the brain is stimulated with music, with sound, then that is more conducive to the educational process. Children learn better when the entire brain is being educated,
right.
Not just the left brain or the right brain, but the entire brain. So bringing in the arts and sciences as well as the strong core academic subjects, that's what makes it African. It doesn't have to be radically different, okay, because even at my school, you're going to have to sit and you're going to have to learn. Discipline is going to be necessary, you understand? But one of the things about our culture, we don't have a hierarchical culture. Ours is more, okay, vertical, you see, or horizontal, excuse me. And as a result of that, my school is going to make use of collective learning, social learning, where the children can operate as a family, support each other's learning, not in a Eurocentric system where they're taught to compete against each other, to be the best child in the class. Eurocentric education is all about winners and losers, those who are intelligent, those who are not. My system isn't going to operate like that. We are all there to support each other. So the children will not be competing with each other or against each other. They will be operating in unison, because we know that children can sometimes teach other children better than adults can. So we're definitely going to use social learning. We're definitely going to use cooperative learning. Our children will have the opportunity to be energetic, to be up, to be moving around, to be interactive, because the brain works better. And cognitive research has shown this. The brain works more effectively when the body is in motion. So when you force the boy to sit still and not be able to move, not be able to energize himself with that African energy, you're suffocating the brain's natural process. So we will allow our children at times, but not all the time, because we have to teach discipline to get up and be energetic and be able to learn as they move and be able to learn as they interact. That's African, to allow that energy a free flow so that it stimulates the deeper cerebrum so that the full academic process can take place.
The fact that it's a residential, and there's going to be a cost factor, have you figured out what range tuition and board will be?
Not at present. We're working on that. That's something that cannot be determined until the monies have been raised to acquire the school.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is going to be based around that fundraiser. So no tuition prices to be given out at this point. In the long-term scheme of things, we would like the school to be totally free. I would hope that we get enough sponsorship and enough business operating at the college, because we also want to have businesses there. The school ultimately needs to be self-funding, you see. So we need to have businesses there. Everything, we need a restaurant there. We need a hotel there. We need a farm there, so we have money that's coming into the school and not just us expecting everyone to fund the school. I don't want that type of operation. I ultimately want the school to be able to fund itself, you see. But I do hope to one day have a situation where it's a totally free tuition, where the school can operate basically by a lottery system, where any African child can be entered into the lottery and randomly selected for admission into the school. And the reason for that is a lot of children who are going to need the school, their parents either might can't afford it or can afford it, but don't see it as a priority. And as such, will choose not to finance their child's education, even if they can't afford it. So I don't want our children being deprived of the education they're going to get at my school, which is going to be second to none, because a parent didn't see it as necessary.
The synchronistic whole brain learning model that you're going to use,
mm-hmm.
have you seen it anywhere in this country? It operates all over the world with melanated people, you know. But have you seen it here?
I think there's some folks who make use of that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some schools where, you know, they're making use of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the one thing that I would emphasize again is we don't have to make education as complicated as we're often told it is. See, the reason we're told education is so difficult is because there's a lot of money to be made off education. So you got a million companies out there saying that if you want to teach them, you got to do it this way so they can sell books
right.
and sell products. Right. Education is not difficult. You can teach a child to read in 2 weeks. You can teach a child how to do advanced math in a month. Education is not difficult. So for me, I'm not going to give the false illusion that it's a very deep, complicated thing in order for African children to learn. Not at all. Okay? Education is very, very direct. It is systematic. It is scientific, but it is direct, and it is easily digestible. What makes a child able to learn? Three things. Rigor, relationships, and relevance. Those are the three things. Not complicated scientific approaches to pedagogy. That doesn't work. They need to have a relationship with the people who are teaching. They need to know that the people care. The instruction needs to be relevant, you see? And then they need to be held to the highest potential of their ability.
Mm-hmm.
That is what makes an excellent school, not all that other stuff. I've seen people remix things, make it more complicated. This is the type of curriculum you got to have. That's a bunch of nonsense. Curriculum doesn't mean nothing if you ain't got the personnel to deliver it. In therapy, I'm a therapist. I can be the best therapist in the world, but if the treatment plan is garbage, I will not help the client. It's the same thing in education. You can have the best curriculum, but if you do not have the best teachers, it won't matter. You see? And if you have the best teachers with the worst curriculum, there's going to be an issue there as well. So you got to make sure the teachers are effective as well as the curriculum. I keep hearing people talk about curriculum, curriculum, curriculum. Personnel drives curriculum. Curriculum don't drive personnel. If I have to choose between good teachers and a good curriculum, I'm taking the good teachers. Because if the curriculum is not good, they will revolutionize it to make it what it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
The personnel is what's the most important thing in a school, not all the other stuff.
Eurocentric education and Western education is, you know, cookie cutter, one size fits all.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people are different. They learn differently. They're different styles of learning. From what I'm hearing you saying, given what you're attempting to do, will you implement like an almost an individual, or let's say, not use the word individual, but a personality type setting so that what you're doing matches the learning style of the child?
What we plan on doing is giving every child their own astrological chart.
Okay.
Because the school is going to be based on African spirituality. So they're going to get an astrological chart, okay, and a head reading to let us know what that child's destiny is. Where they're going to tap into the child's own interests and talents to see what it is they want to do with their life. What type of contribution do they want to make with African people? And as a result of that, the child will have a destiny plan for their education at the school that is specific to them. However, standard courses are standard courses that all the children are going to have to participate in, but they will be given their own individual destiny plan to make sure we're providing them with anything they need above and beyond the standard curriculum of the school to make sure they maximize their potential and are able to do what it is their destiny is calling them to do exactly by the time they finish the school.
Mm-hmm. Now, you say by the time they finish the school, this is going to be pre-K to high school?
Well, I want to,
I
want to take it pre-K to 12th grade in the final analysis. The final analysis, I don't know if we can start there. That's going to depend on the type of startup capital that we have. If we have sufficient startup capital, we'll go pre-K to 12 right from the beginning. If we don't have it, then we'll have to select a couple of grades. And if I'm forced to choose, it'll probably be within middle school. If I have to start with only 3 or 4 grades, it'll be somewhere between 3rd and 7th, and then stretching out a grade down and a grade up every year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you start with 4th through 7th, then next year, 3rd through 8th, 2nd through 9th, 1st through 10th,
mm-hmm.
kindergarten through 11th, and then pre-K through 12th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're looking to do.
The president and the, I guess, the bondholders and the lien holders of the school are attempting to work out liquidation plan.
Mm-hmm.
Have you considered what you would do if you couldn't get the whole campus or just part of
right.
it?
Right. Well, let me clarify what's going on. They're not liquidating the 135 acres of the campus. They've sold the 300 acres of the farmland, and they've sold the daycare center at the front. That's it. Mm-hmm. The 135 acres of the college is still there and has not been touched and won't be touched for a couple of months. Mm-hmm. I'm in communication with the president, so I know what's going on as it goes on. So the school is still there, and they're just hoping that I can come up with the funding so they can transfer it to me as opposed to somebody else who's going to turn it into something other than education. Mm-hmm. They want to keep the school in the hands of someone who's going to stay true to the purpose of the founder, okay, James Solomon Russell. He bought that land with the intention of using it to educate African children, to make sure they are equipped to be successful in the world. So they're partial to people who are interested in that type of a agenda with the campus. I have that. From what I understand, not all of the other potential buyers have that. You see, so they're trying to give me some time. Not much time, but they're trying to give me some time to come up with the money. But the campus, the 135 acres is there, hasn't been touched.
Okay. Give us your... where people can send the resumes and also where people can send contributions.
Contributions can be made by PayPal on the school's website, drumarjohnsonschool.com. They can also mail in the contribution if you prefer, and you want to send make your check or money order payable to FDMG Academy, FDMG Academy. And you want to mail it in care of myself, Dr. Umar Johnson, to P.O. Box 6872, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19132. Again, that's P.O. Box 6872, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19132. Make it payable to FDMG Academy. Send it in care of Dr. Umar Johnson. And if anybody needs to reach me, they can email me at drumarjohnson@yahoo.com. You can also reach me on my own personal cell telephone, and that is area code 215-989-9858. Again, 215-989-9858. Resumes, if you're interested in being considered for employment, send your resume to fdmgresumes@gmail.com.
Have you, I saw the video where you're on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Have you taken, like, architects and engineers to tour the campus to see exactly what type of infrastructural improvements you're going
to
need?
Well, before we do that, we have to first get the boundaries to the campus. The school, from what I understand, has never formally been, what do you want to
survey?
Say? Surveyed. Not in recent times. So before we do any of that, we got to find out what the boundaries are. I do have an architect, a strong brother out of Washington, D.C., who's working with me. He's already designed a rehabilitation plan that would transform that campus into a state-of-the-art school. But again, we got to get the boundaries before we do anything else, and that's something that my realty company is working on now.
Promoting this to the broader community. In other words, one thing to YouTube, but there are black people out here who have funds.
Mm-hmm.
You've spoken to me about some of the people you attend the contact with. And you mentioned the Masonic Order, you mentioned the Greek letter organizations, you mentioned some of the churches. Have you reached out to the various denominations, even because St. Paul was affiliated with the Episcopal Church? So have you reached out to that type of constituency?
I have members in my team, many of whom, in one way or another, are affiliated with almost every type of a church structure, every type of fraternal structure that's out there. I also have members of my team who have very personal relationships with celebrities as well. So we're tapping every possible resource that we can to try to get the money. But there's few people who don't know about me. So this isn't all about Umar Johnson coming to them.
Right.
This is also about them coming to Umar Johnson. People know what I'm trying to do. I've been talking about it for years. So it's a two-way street as far as I'm concerned. If I was somebody who was unknown, that would be understandable. But I'm the most requested speaker in the United States and have been for 3 years in a row. So people know who I am, and they know what I'm trying to do. So if they're serious, I expect them to come forward as much as they expect me to find them.
Okay. All right. As we close out, give us the donation links, the places, even the mailing address,
okay,
and also the resume for the people who want to, who have an interest in a heart to try to stand what you're doing.
Certainly, certainly. Please, if you're interested in giving back to our young people, send me your resume to fdmgresumes@gmail.com. fdmgresumes@gmail.com. Please visit drumarjohnsonschool.com. drumarjohnsonschool.com to make your PayPal donation. Also, please send it in the mail if you prefer. Make the check or money order payable to FDMG Academy and send it in care of Dr. Umar Johnson, P.O. Box 6872, Philadelphia, PA 19132. Feel free to give me a telephone call or text message to 215-989-9858. Also, feel free to email me at drumarjohnson@yahoo.com. If you're on Twitter or Instagram, please connect with me at Dr. Umar Johnson. And if you're on Facebook, you connect with me with Dr. Umar Ifatunde, Ifatunde. Make sure you sign up for my text message club by texting Dr. Umar to 36,000 on your cell phone, so you can get free regular updates from me as far as where I'm going to be, what I'm going to be doing, where I'm going to be going. This weekend, I'll be up in Ohio, Central State University, which is a black college. Looking forward to being in Ohio first time. That's the resting place of Martin Delaney, one of the grandfathers of Pan-Africanism. Sunday, we'll be in Cincinnati, the Astley Museum. Looking forward to coming back. Pittsburgh, I'll be in Pittsburgh for the first time, Saturday, June 14th. And then I will be also in Houston, Texas for the first time, June 27th and 28th. Oyotunji African Village, South Carolina, July the 4th. We'll be taking a trip to Africa, group trip to Ghana, July 22nd to August 3rd. For more information about that, send me an email or a text message. And we just building. August the 21st is the deadline. We need to raise $5 million to give our boys the school that they deserve, a heaven on earth, a revolutionary academy that we've never seen before. That's what we're going to be building. Second to none, a blueprint for everybody at other school, every other school in existence. We've seen the rest. Now it's time to see the best. So support the Fred Douglas Marcus Garvey RBG International Leadership Academy that's being built by yours truly, Dr. Umar Johnson, kinsman to Frederick Douglass, East Coast Garveyite number one.
Cyberspace is the place that no army with artillery invades.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanton. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try it.